We're rolling.
Okay. I'd like to call to order the July 5th, 2017 meeting of the South Kingstown Conservation Commission. First order of business is call to order. Lorraine Jubert.
Here.
Jennifer James.
Here.
Ann Heffron.
Here.
Mary Talbot Raviano.
Here.
I am David Flanders, and we're also joined by our staff, senior planner Doug McLean. Next order of business is acceptance of the minutes for June 7th. Does anybody have any comments, changes? In that case, I'll hear a motion.
I move to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? Oh, the minutes are accepted as written.
Let's have a vote on the minutes, though.
Oh, sorry. All those in favor, excuse me.
Aye.
Aye.
Thanks, Doug.
Thank you.
Our next item D is zoning ordinance section 505-6 for a new dwelling unit with garage on Ministerial Road, AP 67, Lot 67, across from Red House Road, Rocco Baldelli, owner applicant.
Hello.
Hi.
Very nice.
Hello.
If you guys could just state your name for the record.
Rob Horgan, Horgan Builders.
Shree Jackson, Jackson Surveying.
Great. Do you guys want to just begin with a quick overview of the application?
Sure. Rather straightforward. It's a parcel that was created a couple years ago out of a large residential compound lot. The acreage is 11 and a half acres. Many of you might recognize the parcel just driving down Ministerial Road because it's basically the only field on the road, so when you go by it, it's easy to recognize. We've gone to task to put together a design that, one, puts the garage and the drives and everything behind the house and the structure per ordinance. And then secondly, we've gone to task to put together a landscaping plan to increase the buffer. That includes native shrubs, bushes, trees. And I think it's, you know, you have the laurels, the pine trees, very similar to what you see along Ministerial Road.
Something that the client wants to do too, to create the buffer. He has this long porch on the Ministerial Road side that looks out over the fields, so we really want to try and start creating more of a private yard for himself.
Are you guys seeking any other relief for the application, any relief at zoning?
No.
Dimensional variances?
No. We've got the permits to obtain would be one development plan review, you know, here in South Kingstown. We have received OWTS approval already. We are disturbing just over an acre, so that triggers the RIPTES permit. However, RIPTES had asked, because of the age of verification, to actually have it reflagged and submit as a wetlands permit. So we're just changing tactics, and it'll be incorporated wetlands and RIPTES permit together.
Got you far enough outside. Oh, no, you're not.
Yeah, we're a good 10, 12 feet outside of the 50-foot perimeter buffer anyways, so.
So we're making a recommendation to the planning board?
Correct, as part of the development plan review.
Our purview is only the driveway, the garage door location, correct?
Yeah, with these Ministerial Road, it's really, the standards are a buffer to the roadway, which they're actually creating a buffer.
Mm-hmm.
It's generally a non-linear driveway, so that you don't see straight down, and it's garages that aren't facing Ministerial Road.
Right.
Those are the prime standards.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
In this particular case, the driveway and the shared driveway that was part of a right of way, so it's existing, it's been existing for several years. So there'd be no new curb cut.
Yep.
And is that paved or that's gravel?
It is paved.
It is paved?
It's like a stone macadam,
yeah.
So yeah.
No, I've been by it thousands of times, so. So, just because I'm not remembering right now, there is a lot of vegetation through here right now at the back of that meadow, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Along the private drive?
Yeah, like, so the meadow would be here.
Yeah.
There's vegetation that comes out.
If you actually look at the site plan, you can see the
brush line.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's mature oak trees, mature maple trees, and then mostly laurel.
Yeah.
So it's an evergreen brush there. And then the other side of the drive is nothing but laurel that goes up a steep slope.
Right, right, yeah, no, I know that side's really steep. I'm just wondering how much you're actually going to see it from the road anyways.
The house?
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing right now that sticks out into the field.
Yeah.
It's all field, so
yeah.
It's pretty visible.
Okay.
Out there, but.
And we have put the house as far back without getting into the slopes and the setbacks and stuff like that. You know, trying to mitigate. You know, at first, originally at preliminary during subdivision, the clients actually were thinking walk out using the slope and stuff like this. And fortunately, this client actually wants the look of being in a field and stuff, so we slid it out.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting house design. I mean, it's an existing drive that's already there. You can't do anything to alter it, and anything you're going to do is going to mess with anything more.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, they meet the standards that are required per ministerial road, which is the review, the specific purview of our review.
Yep, right. Anybody?
I am a little concerned about...
50-foot buffer from ministerial.
I have to check my zoning standards. Sheree, does that... That sounds correct.
Normally, you have to maintain a 50-foot buffer. If there was vegetation there,
it has to stay.
It has to stay 50 foot. So, I don't believe the ordinance reads to actually filling in the 50 foot. But I think
I don't think so.
Yeah. I think you'll find with our screening that we've provided, it's going to do that pretty, you know, a couple of years pretty quickly. So.
Yeah.
I mean, they have pretty tall trees that we're planting already. You know, we've got 8-footers, 12-footers, so they're going to look pretty mature.
Do check out the subdivision planting specs as well.
We did, yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
One of my concerns is not related to the driveway, because I think you've met the requirements for the driveway door not being visible. But do you think the straw wattle is going to be sufficient to protect the wetland on near the perimeter wattle?
I do. A stake straw wattle, in my opinion, is much more sturdy than a silt fence, in all honesty.
Right.
People tend to install them better than a silt
fence,
so I prefer them over the silt fence.
And you'll be marking like other stockpile areas and other things like that
normally
the plan?
We are retained to either stake the house and septic system areas for compaction. I'll definitely be staking like the stormwater stuff for compact to keep it away from compactions.
Right.
Other than that, and like limits of disturbance. But actual stockpile areas, they have a tendency to move a little bit at time of construction, you know. But in this particular case, there really isn't any other area.
So you're going to physically mark off the infiltration areas for stormwater and wastewater on the plan and in the field.
Right.
Okay.
Can I just ask out of curiosity what your water table was at there?
I believe it was an 8-foot water table. It worked just right out to grade from...
I could have read the plan.
That's quite all right. 95
I was just curious.
103, 8 foot.
Oh, it's a pretty good water table being right next to the wetlands there.
Well, actually, it matches the grade of the wetlands is 95 and the grade of hill,
doesn't look like there's that much of a hill between that meadow and where the wetland is.
It doesn't, and that's one of the reasons for it looks like a lot of fill, but it was to give the look so that we don't see like a foundation coming out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
We actually wanted to mimic maintaining a field. Because the second you get a structure, you're going to see the slope.
Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, because now you don't even notice it.
Yeah. Huh.
And it's actually already kind of this natural swale that kind of cuts out in front of where this house is going. So I think increasing the pitch of the grade there is really going to take away from the natural look of the field.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with it.
I feel that it meets the requirements of the ordinance, and I move to approve it.
Do we have any more a second on the motion?
A second.
Any discussion? All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Next order of business is advisory review, proposed two-bedroom dwelling in OWTS located within 150 feet of the wetland.
Yeah.
Robert McLean, owner, applicant.
Hello? Can I hear your name? Is that McLean?
Yeah. Yeah, Graham McLean.
Sorry.
How are you?
Feel free to join us all at the table.
Slow motion engineer.
That's all right.
Gene Springs is the design engineer for the system.
Did you,
You come over here.
Typical lady.
Oh, did you introduce yourself for the record?
Oh, Donald Packer, I'm the attorney representing the applicant. Some of you don't know, some of you don't.
And I think you said it, Donald, I didn't catch.
Eugene Spring?
Eugene Spring is the project engineer?
Yes.
Thank you. Would you guys like to begin with just a brief overview of the application?
Yeah, we've got DEM approval for the site, for a two-bedroom house with deed restrictions for the well and for the composting toilet design that we got approval for. The reason being that we had to maintain the 100-foot well distance and then sort of the disposal field, and because of the denitrification type of system that we proposed, we eliminated the nitrate section of the waste by using a composting toilet within the home and then disposing of the gray water via a small sand filter. We've maintained the 100-foot distance to the proposed well. We've maintained 50-foot distance from the coastal feature. We've met the setbacks for the small house. As you can see, it's a pretty small unit. And we're getting ready to go to coastal, but we obviously need a letter from the building office so that we can apply to coastal for the project.
Mm-hmm. And it was limited to a two-bedroom home,
yeah,
filed in DEM, and had to file a deed with those restrictions on it for a two-bedroom home with a composting toilet. Mm-hmm. That deed's already been filed.
How did you choose the composting toilet? Did DEM require the composting toilet, or was that just one of the alternatives you considered?
No, that was sort of like the last straw, because of the fact that, because of the well issues within the neighborhood, because of the small sizes of the lots, because of the fact that this is the last lot on the street, and coastal features kind of swing around, limiting the area where we can do anything with. And based on some of the reports that we went through for our variance application at DEM, groundwater flow direction, the higher levels of nitrates in some of the local wells, we've eliminated the nitrogen situation. DEM did approve another one similar to that down the street about a year or two ago.
Okay.
And so in our conversations and our variances back and forth with DEM, this was the best environmental solution to the house.
What model of Sunmar is this one?
Because
I went on the site and checked them out. They're pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure if I heard all of the Sunmar. The Sunmar composting toilet. It's probably in the... It might have been in the variance application. I did so much paperwork. It might be, that's the disinfection, that's the sulfur unit. That's the unit that's going to get rid of any of the viruses coming out of the, we have it in a,
we didn't
specify. There were several types that they were looking at because of the height involved of getting up the stairs and going down the stairs. But the unit that we're going to have is going to have the composting section in the lower level, which is in a flood zone, so that they don't have to go up and down the stairs all the time, but maybe just once a month or so to discharge it and not take up so much room in the upper living area.
Is that the same?
Yeah, it's the same one. I didn't have the Sunmar on here. It's on the DEM variance, which is
oh, you have that.
happy with that.
Yeah.
So during a flood, the compost bin would be flooded?
Anything in the lower level would be flooded, but it's a non-habitable area. And it's a sealed container. Mm-hmm. In any sort of a projection of a storm coming, you know, people are just going to take everything out and get out of town. It's one of those items.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if this is a bin type composting unit that has a large bin that needs to be stirred up?
Circulation.
Or is it the cartridge type?
No, it's a circulation type.
Okay. Are you familiar with those?
Yeah, well, I've got the brochure, but I didn't bring it with us today. So.
It's my understanding that they generate a leachate, which they sometimes call tea.
The VDM always required a overflow tank. There's a very tiny line that comes off the bottom, just in case there is any residual stuff, and that goes into a holding tank. But it's been the observance of the people that have used it and even the manufacturer, that's sort of like an emergency type of situation. It never really fills up a two-quart area in the course of the year, but that's not going to be disposed of on site.
Okay. It's my understanding that sometimes that line goes to the Advantix, but yours is going to be
holding
all retained?
Retained in a holding tank, yeah.
Okay.
EM put that one of those stipulations in one of the other variances that I was reviewing on that street. And if you look at the brochure, you'll see one little line that goes out and says, well, there might be some leachate, you know, some moisture in the system, but it's not going into our treatment tank, not going into the Advantix filter. It's just going to go into a small holding tank.
Okay, and that'll be retained separate from the
correct
solid compost. And then, do you have a maintenance provider to go and stir that up?
There will be a maintenance contract once we get to the construction phase that requires the annual maintenance, and all that will be recorded in the town hall and to get the final okay to move into the house. So VDM will require that maintenance certificate.
But that will specifically be a maintenance contract for the bin as well as a maintenance contract for the Advantix and for the drain field.
Yeah, there'll be two separate.
Yeah.
One for the Advantix, you know, Atlantic Solutions will take care of the Advantix, and then Sunmar maintenance contract will take care of the compost and toilet and its components.
Okay.
It's sort of like the last documentation we have to provide as engineers back to DEM before they can issue a certificate of conformance.
Can you explain the well water situation?
Well, the well water situation is we're going to be doing another well. The existing well that belongs to his house will be abandoned, and this well will provide water to both houses via a deed restriction, which has already been filed.
Yeah.
So the legal work from these gentlemen have already been done to provide that water for both facilities. And what that does, it eliminates an existing well that's only 40 feet away from their existing system. So this well location, we meet all 100-foot setbacks, which is what VDM pressed us to accomplish at the beginning of our journey.
Right. So there are three houses involved. The one...
No, there's only two.
No.
The proposed house and this house next door.
With the well, there's two houses.
Yeah.
The well with the house. Right, that's what I'm saying. The well, the house with the well. So there's one, two, three, the two existing houses.
No, that doesn't, those were off-site wells. This is an on-site well for the subject lot. It will be pumped into both houses, lot 16,
okay.
Lot 61.
Yeah, right, okay. So what is the existing water quality at the existing well? The existing house, is it potable?
they live there. They've been living there for a lot of years.
But have you had it tested?
Many times.
Yeah.
I have many filters on it also.
Oh, okay.
That's my own choosing. It makes more palatable. Not as hot.
Is it high nitrogen?
It would be hot without the filters. Yeah.
It's hot. It's high in calcium, probably.
It would be hot without the filters.
No, I meant high in nitrogen.
Does it taste as good? Filters mainly in the taste. And it's some of the best water. We've had people compliment us on the water after they drink it. This is the best water I've ever tasted. So it's good after you filter it.
I've been there since I was a kid. I've never had a problem with the wall.
Okay. So the new well, you're going to have that tested before you build the house?
I will.
Yeah.
It's pretty standard now.
Yeah.
Just
sure.
State
building official requires potable water testing.
Right. The other issue I had was that you show the limits of disturbance just a few feet from the proposed house. It looks like, and then the wetland buffer from DEM wetland buffer is beyond that.
Yeah, well, that is the buffer will be maintained, but what has happened is on our application postal, we're going to put in a rain garden. So if you want to call that a construction item, then we can rearrange the
right.
See, this was approved before we're getting our coastal permit
right.
together. So we can extend that around the rain garden. The rain garden is going to be off to the side. We had submitted a rain garden.
Right,
I
understand.
But
yeah.
That's the second step.
Well, it would be logical to keep the existing proposed limits of disturbance, and then when the house is completed, then build a rain garden.
Yeah, that'll be the last.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be in virgin soil, and we don't want trucks.
Right, so you want to maintain those limits of disturbance so you don't compact that area.
Right.
But the practical question is, do you think you can build a house with those limits so close?
It's going to be on piles, so I'll probably design a pile system with columns. I've done a bunch of those, and it doesn't take much. It's not like we're digging a full foundation. We're going to go in there and dig little holes about this big,
yeah.
and we're going to put a screw in, cap it, weld it, put our forms in, and go up to the upper level. So we've minimized pretty much everything we can minimize on the site. We tried to maximize it because we still have to apply to coastal for construction setback. So, but that's pretty small. We got, instead of 25, we got one section that can meet 25, or then we can make it 22. So I don't see a whole issue here. And then obviously the buffer is going to grow into its natural state. So
right.
it's fairly well grown up if anybody's at the site. They've been mowing it continuously, but because it's new construction, the buffer will take place.
Right. So basically everything
around the 50-foot
around the 50-foot area will be resorted to natural and not lawn.
It's it's all natural.
Yeah.
Because the rain garden, that stuff goes in afterward.
Yeah. Right.
We're
I
not
going to
destroy what's the vegetation that's there.
Okay. So you'll also definitely have to protect the area where the Advantex drain field is going so that that doesn't get compacted during construction.
I know I've designed and installed, or I had installed a lot of those.
So you'll have to just make sure that it's fenced off with a strong enough fencing.
I'll be on the site when I can walk. This will be another year or so time to get approval, channels of approval.
Okay.
Have you been using fertilizers on the lawn?
This has been an unmaintained lot.
It's been what?
Do you fertilize the lawn?
No, I don't fertilize anything.
That's my own drinking water.
I drink the water. I'm mad at people who fertilize.
Good.
Shoo away the geese. It's about the best thing you can do.
People kill the grass in the driveway with a spray gun. It's good in my well.
The other thing is, so a new trend is to begin monitoring the actual treatment performance of the septic systems after it's constructed about twice a year. It seems like that would be a good way to make sure that the septic system is really performing as it's supposed to. And the town is going to the Carmody system that they can your maintenance provider can provide that data to the town electronically.
I think we do that right now.
You do that right now with your
yeah,
existing
yeah.
system?
Yeah, twice a year they come. Twice a year
they
report. Yeah.
But I think when they come now, they maintain the system and report that they maintained it.
Right.
And now more people are beginning to have their maintenance provider actually take a sample, send it to a lab, and verify the nitrogen concentration in bacteria. It's not very expensive, and they would do that when they maintain the system and send it in to the town also.
Okay. Just some very well, I don't think it's not a requirement right now.
It's not a requirement now, but I think in this location, because it's right near the water,
Yes.
Plus, it would be protecting you so that you know that your system is functioning as it's supposed to.
That's true.
So you're not contaminating your own drinking water.
Right.
And you're not paying your maintenance provider to not meet the standard.
There's not going to be any nitrates in the samples, and we're using a salt for disinfection, so we're going to get some pretty clean samples when that takes place.
Right.
It kind of seems unnecessary since it's a compost system, it's not a
treatment system.
If somebody looks at all the data and scrolls through it and they don't realize that it's a gray water system, it may skew their data. So they would have to
put red flags
asterisk and say, this is gray water.
Right. So I think it would be useful to monitor for at least a year on two occasions. And then if you're finding that it's completely meeting the standards and with, barely any nitrogen, then that could be eliminated. But the issue here also is pathogens because it's so close to the water body, and sometimes the UV filters are known to need a new bulb annually.
Oh, yeah.
So if that's done, then it could be meeting the standard. But if your maintenance provider isn't doing a good job or the turbidity is too high, you might not be. So it's really just a red flag to the maintenance provider to improve their maintenance. So it's a protection for you, and it's not that expensive. It's not very expensive.
We'll make sure that when the installation takes place, because we'll have separate providers for each phase of the system.
Right.
Although Atlantic Solutions, they can take care of it. They can take care of the Salco and the pump chambers.
Yeah.
They'll check on that too.
It's just something that would be good practice, but it's not required.
Yeah, we've been hearing stories that South Kingston's going to do something similar to Charleston, get their own wastewater management section set up. Is that?
But we're beginning with. Carmody is an online management system. So all of our inspections will be recorded online to have some feedback.
Yep, it's going on.
Had to take every precaution to do. Anybody else? David?
So this is now a recommendation to the planning board?
No, this is to the Zoning Board of Review for their special use permit under Section 504.
Is anybody here to make a motion? Listing.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
The site is extremely sensitive as it's very close to the shoreline of the pond, which is already impaired for nitrogen and bacteria. So it warrants utmost care in its development. The applicant has taken steps to reduce nitrogen drastically using a composting system. It's a requirement that the holding tank retain all the compost and also all the effluent or compost tea from that tank, from the bin, and that be hauled away off-site and not connected to the Advantech system. And that there must be a maintenance contract for the composting toilet bin maintenance and a maintenance contract for the Advantech and the leach field. We recommend monitoring the system for at least 1 year on two times a year to ensure that the treatment standards are being met for nitrogen and bacteria, and that would just be one sample of nitrogen and bacteria twice a year. And that data should be reported to the town wastewater management officer through the Carmody system. In order to control site disturbance, it's our understanding, just from seeing these applications, that protection of the buffer has been identified as one of the most important features in order to reduce nitrogen and bacteria to the pond. That's from previous studies that have been done. So we want to make sure that the limits of disturbance around construction are well established and in place on the plans and in the field before construction begins, and that those limits be preserved and maintained. And if the existing proposed silt fence is not working, then a stronger type fence would have to be installed to ensure those limits are maintained. So the limits would be for the general construction and also to specifically protect the infiltration systems like the rain garden and the leach field location. any site, any areas that are disturbed with traffic or stockpiles and as a result are compacted would have to be decompacted according to the Soil Erosion Sediment Control Manual under the soil topsoiling standards, and then the adequate amount of soil brought back in so that it's actually, it's not just gravel. I think that
but Lorraine, that's for area, you're talking about for areas that they plan to use for like the Advantix, not just a general area.
Well, like the, any small lawn areas, unless it's going to be beach grass or something.
No, we're going to use the standard. It's on my, my notes for, you know, putting grass back where around our system to maintain stability.
Right.
And we don't want root systems getting into the sand.
Right. But in general, there would be low input landscaping that doesn't require fertilizers because using fertilizers would be a negative impact. And then the buffer, as required by CRMC, would be marked as required by CRMC and left to grow naturally.
Okay. Anybody else have anything to add to the motion? Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
I'd be happy to recycle them.
But hang on to mine. You can expect a written motion within the next
you
couple of days. We'll be sending it to the.
You might have to write up a few random notes.
They're expensive to yourself.
No, why not? You should encourage the town to send electronic copies
of. Do that.
Yep.
It's so
yep.
much easier.
He's going to need that. And these guys have already, you know, we're talking to them, and I believe they're already getting in line.
Or you know what? You display it up there.
Yeah.
We use our fancy new monitors to display
the final for the town.
Yeah.
The board. I believe they were already talking to Jim O'Hara about it.
And then the final in GIS.
It's horrible.
These
big plans that are big.
They're in line, and I told Jeff that he can expect that the CONCOM will be sending a letter. Yeah, but I'll send Robert a courtesy copy of that letter when we send it.
Nah, it's in the record.
All right. Thank you, folks. Yep, thank you, guys.
Our next order of business is advisory review zoning ordinance section 602, groundwater protection overlay district, marijuana related uses, Western Industries. AP 22-1, Lot 38, located at 4 Frank Avenue, 5A Builders, applicant, Arnold Holdings Limited, owner. Doug, before we get into this, while they're setting up, could you explain to the commission what the limits of purview for our review here?
So this is in front of us because this is a use in the groundwater protection overlay district, and that does trigger a Conservation Commission review specifically of the drainage aspect. So I think I, in the memo, provided a reference of the specific statement in our zoning ordinance, and that is basically that the stormwater runoff control shall be, you know, as specified in the zoning ordinance, is the purview of our review for this application. And as you may have caught from an email that was sent just this afternoon, we received the drainage plans, and I believe Eric is going to give us an overview of the drainage plans tonight. So the main focus of our review is on the drainage aspects of the site, and we are providing an advisory review to the planning board as part of a development plan review.
Do we have individual hard copies?
Eric, do you have any? I have one printed. I didn't want to print one out for everybody, but I mean, the materials you sent.
The actual report, and then there was an operations and maintenance for the stormwater, which is sent also.
And then, do you guys all want to state your names for the record?
Sure. How? Eric Creevy, professional engineer with Creep Engineering.
Fireman Richard.
Great. So,
can you give an overview real quick?
Yeah, why don't you give an overview? You've got drainage on your plan underneath that one?
Yep.
Great.
So, I want to get to the property real quickly here. So, the property is located on Frank Avenue, 138's located right here. Kingston's train station's right here. This is a small offshoot road, railroad. It's on the old Arnold Lumber Lot. It's assessor's plat 22-1, lot 38. The total parcel is about a 5.34-acre parcel located here. It's zoned I-1. It's an industrial zone. It's directly adjacent to the Amtrak railroad line here as well. It's actually this right here. There's two existing buildings here, and I want to just quickly bring this into focus on this. The original design, which has already been reviewed and approved by the town, was part of this Kingston Station commercial condominium project. So there was actually six buildings that were already reviewed. You can see the first two buildings, there's a condo unit that's located in the front here, a second one here, and then there's four future buildings that could have been could be built with this as well, and that was reviewed and approved already. The reason we're actually here is strictly on the use. It is a marijuana cultivation facility. So if it were not for that use, we would be able to apply for a building permit today. This is with all of the existing, the way that it was. So we could use the original approvals and just build the building as it was originally approved. We're actually going because we need a special use permit for that use. So that kind of starts to trigger this process. We're here to get some input and advisory on stormwater because of the groundwater protection overlay district. So we did perform some soil evaluations. Let me turn it around because this plan's pretty far out of John Carver's plans. It was better looking than ours. This is zoomed in tighter here. So the building itself proposed is a 10,500 square foot building. The original building that was under here as part of the condo was like 12,000 square foot. So this is actually a smaller building than what was originally proposed. We have two stormwater measures that we have on here. So the roof runoff itself and a small area that would contribute on overland comes into a rain garden that's located right here. And then the parking lot area would come overland. We have a grass filter strip here and located to a sand filter. And the sand filter is grass. It's sand underneath for treatment, but it has a grass surface. So it would physically just look like a grass depression in this area. We do have a dumpster enclosure located in the rear. The entire facility would be located, would be surrounded with a chain link fence for security purposes, and there would be a gate in the front. There was some additional landscaping and screening that was provided in the front. If you've been down Frank Ave, it's actually already very well vegetated right along there, but we're looking to supplement even more just from the screening purposes as well. This area is actually really well vegetated right in front of me as well. Parking, we actually have six parking spaces that are proposed. There's four employees. Very low traffic use. That's kind of an overview of everything. So what we provided was the calculations, again, for taking the entire roof runoff, 10,500 square feet of roof runoff for the full 100-year storm, infiltrating right on site. We did have soil evaluations that were performed in both locations of where the infiltration would be taking place. They were done by Class 4 licensed soil evaluator. They're very, very good sandy soils, gravelly sandy soils in this area. We had 8 and 9 foot groundwater tables. We are providing required separations to the groundwater table in order to get that treatment on site. We believe that given the original approval, but looking at the older designs of what the original approval was a very traditional just detention basins. So we feel that we're able to do kind of a hybrid here. Even though it is approved under the old, we're able to take it and bring it up to some of the new DEM stormwater design manual by putting the sand filter with the grass strip in advance and then putting the rain garden in the front for some additional treatment as well.
So your main treatment is going to be the sand filter, because that rain garden, isn't that in kind of an area that's kind of industrially compacted already now? I mean, you're looking for virgin soils for rain gardens for the most part. Right, but it's historically like a compacted area. There's a lot of traffic and stuff that goes through.
Not there.
No, not there.
We're just off the ass. Okay.
Yeah, that's off the ass. That's in the woods.
That is in the woods?
Yeah. The area, just from groundwater protection purposes as well, it is municipal sewer in this area. There is municipal sewer that's located on this property. We will extend it for this use too, so there'll be no septic dispersals. There is public water as well, so there would be no intake. There'd be no uphole from like any wells or such. So we're able to use from the Kingston water system. So from an aquifer perspective, we're really trying to control, you know, obviously the input is controlled through the municipal, the output is controlled through the municipal, and then taking the stormwater, really doing, you know, both from the stormwater design manual and also from the town's requirements, taking the clean roof runoff from the roof here, putting it back in. Real quickly on the roof itself, it is actually a pitched roof. There are no mechanical units or anything located on the roof. So it would be gutter system that would be able to come and recharge directly into the virgin material there.
Is there any, what are the potential pollutants that would be in the building? Do you have oil heat? Do you have any storage of any kind of chemicals, herbicides, pesticides?
Yeah, there are no pesticides. You do use chemical nutrients. I can't exactly tell you what's in them exactly. But other than that, it's all.
How about the heat? What do you have heat?
Heat would probably be mini split air conditioning, but I'm not sure.
But is it oil? Is it gas? Is it
electric?
Yeah. I was going to say it's kicking off lights for the most part.
So is it electricity?
Yeah.
Just electric?
It's be electric.
With a refrigerant. Yeah.
Okay. So is that the loading dock on top?
There is a loading bay on the side right here. So it's located right here. So it's just a bay door that would open. So it would be able to come right here.
So if you're getting a delivery of fertilizers or maybe fungicides or anything like
that?
No. No other pesticides? I mean, the main concern would be having a spill at that loading dock, or diesel oil spills, leaks from large trucks. Like, usually DEM requires, well, probably with a higher traffic area, they would require some sort of protection, like oil-water separator, but that wouldn't help with the fertilizer.
Yeah, I haven't seen that as much on the pure manufacturing. I've seen it on like gas stations and such. They'll usually isolate it and put it through like we do Cumberland Farms, and they'll put it through an oil water separator. Then they won't even let you put it through a sand filter because they want it to get a little extra treatment, so like a rainbow or such. So, but that's more like a real petroleum type use.
So that would be impervious.
So this is impervious surface, yes.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Did you consider permeable for the other parking, for the employee parking?
We hadn't, mainly from a maintenance perspective, and just one of the problems we see a lot of times is that trying to demarcate the permeable versus the non-permeable, when people go seal it anyway. This is what happens.
Yeah. So that small site, you probably wouldn't be able to use permeable asphalt. You'd have to probably use block pavers.
Pavers or such, We felt, and especially in the industrial type area, we're trying to keep it in a place where the maintenance is going to be practical and where it's going to be doable. So that's what we're trying to do. We did provide an operations and maintenance. It follows all of the DEM criteria for each of the practices. So it's how often each of them is being done, the same filter, the rain garden, and the filter strip as well.
Are there any flood drains in the proposed building?
I don't think so, no, right? Floor drains?
There will be, actually, yes.
Really?
Yep.
Where they discharge to this stormwater system?
Not sure.
I thought floor drains were prohibited.
Yeah,
I
was just
going to
say.
Well, that could change. That's, yeah.
Yeah,
that
would be a key drainage feature you'd have to
be
aware of. So if you are taking, I mean, I imagine that the use requires a lot of water.
Actually, you know what? I apologize. There are no floor drains. So it's a contained system that circulates water throughout.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I imagine it uses a lot of water, but any of the water that you're done with and mixing, it should go into...
Well,
it
recycles.
Yeah, the treatment system are taken off site, but you can't put that water into the site.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, I was wrong. There are no drains.
They try to reduce
the
use
of
water.
The calculation shows the amount of water that's being used is 99.9% of it's drowned by the plants.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have much over.
There's not a lot of waste.
No,
there's hardly any. Yeah.
We based it on a few other companies that get their water. They measure the water in the sewer, and it's
very
and then for
the only water that we're really going to use in the sewers is the bathrooms.
Using the bathroom for the employees.
But I'm just, because it's in the Chippewa Aquifer that is already stressed for water withdrawal. I mean, it's not a stormwater issue per se, but I'm just wondering how much water use it would be getting, how much water you'd be using.
That's probably, if I were to guess, I can't say accurately, but maybe 100 gallons a month.
That's all?
That's it?
Yeah.
It uses, wow, the system.
But the plant's going to use
I think it's going to depend on what stage they are in growth.
Well, yeah. When they're large, they drink more.
Yeah, okay.
But generally, a quarter gallon a day at the most.
Okay. Are you guys planning on, I'm imagining that you have a certain number of plants that you can grow right now. Will you be expanding it so you would be using more water in the future?
That could be a possibility, but actually, no, since the building is only 10,000 square feet.
So you'll be limited by space someday.
In your maintenance plan for de-icing, you talk about salt storage areas and runoff from the parking lot. Can you restrict the use of salt and just stick to sand?
That's not a problem, right?
It's all employee traffic for the most part. It's not like they have anybody else that's coming, whether it be concerns of liability necessarily. People have a tendency to overspray areas for liability. They don't want people to slip and fall. So I would imagine that probably could be accommodated.
Good.
What's the percent impervious, including the pavement? I know you listed it for the building.
I don't know that offhand. I'm sorry. I don't. Over the whole parcel, because it's not, I mean, this is not a, it's part of the overall condominium.
But
I just don't know that offhand. I could grab it with the calcs and just take the two impervious numbers on it, if you want to just wait a quick minute.
Now, and a lot less than what the plan was approved for.
Building coverage is allowed in this 80% and 23% right now.
If you look at the first two buildings, the way the project is approved, which will be tomorrow, we'll pull four building permits and build it exactly like that, 3 inches along the edge.
Right.
There's a lot more asphalt.
Yeah,
I don't need it, so there's no sense of putting it. The future buildings will be different. We don't know what the future buildings are going to be right now.
Yeah.
I would approximate, I'm looking at the calculations. So the calculations have the building going here and then for the impervious going there. And just taking those two watersheds, it comes out to about half an acre. So the building itself is about a quarter of an acre, 10,000 feet. And then this is about 10,000 as well for this building area as well. So it's about half an acre. If you take the additional area, by the time you kind of build it, I'd say maybe about 50% if I go approximate.
I mean, that is high, but if you're saying that you're able to infiltrate a 100-year storm,
yep, 100-year storm,
not just 1 inch.
Nope, 100-year storm.
100-year storm.
And we kind of have to, given the design point. So we don't have, it's not like there's a downstream anything where we could put it. That's what it does today. So the topography is relatively flat in this area, and it kind of stays in this area. So it's not like we would be having a discharge anywhere.
Right.
So it's pre-development equals zero offsite effectively anyway. So we have to keep everything on site.
Yeah.
It's not like, you see a lot of sites where it's you've got a wetland or something.
Just as long as you guys can make sure those areas that you're going to use for infiltration don't get compacted during construction,
That's always critical. Yeah.
It's too bad you can't find another location that isn't treed for the rain garden. Is it trees or just scrubby vegetation?
It's mostly scrub.
It's scrubby.
Because when you go down Frank,
This is actually pretty good in the front, then over here gets scrubby. It was cleared at one time, and then it's starting to infill with like a brush. It's just
Like
bottom line and stuff, because they run down there.
Yeah, okay.
It's funny because, Alex was talking a little bit beforehand and saying how some of the practices of these in the front here, and it was one of those that was like, we'd rather stay away from that area so that we can maintain that as much as possible.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure how close it was because I know there's so much traffic and people are parking like all over the place for the gymnastics stuff and all that. It's like crazy through there. Yeah.
One other question is you call it a rain garden, but it must be designed using the bioretention standards?
Probably.
I would think,
because
the rain garden design is only for residential.
That's right, yeah.
And in the O&M plan, instead of using the bioretention maintenance list. You're using an infiltration system maintenance list. Mm-hmm. Was that intentional?
No, not necessarily. That was probably more general on the sand filter side of things.
No, you're using the sand filter
right,
O&M guide.
Right. I don't know if that was actually intentional. No, I think the bio retention makes more sense.
Okay, so that would have to be replaced.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's just which one is
used for maintenance.
Which one's used
and,
for maintenance.
And maybe label it bio retention.
Which one is used for maintenance for your certain maintenance activities that you have to do for each other. In there was general infiltration practices. So Elaine is saying that there's another one that DEM puts together, and one of them is bioretention. So we just need to replace that one bioretention. It's a standard template of how often each of the items gets on inspecting the retention.
The other thing for would be for whatever lawn areas you have would be extremely minimal fertilizing just to establish it.
So, I mean, it's,
and then you wouldn't really need it anymore.
Aesthetics aren't necessarily.
There's going to be that much lawn there.
I mean, you could probably go with just, you know, xeriscaping, you know, other kinds of landscaping other than lawn. But if you did have lawn, you might need a tiny bit when you first install it, but you wouldn't need it again after.
I would agree with that. It's again, it's not a retail business where people are like looking to make it aesthetically.
Right.
You know, it's enough to make sure that you have the.
For your planting specs, I think it's time to move over using the town's subdivision planting specs. We're trying to get uniformity for our applications.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Sure, the planting specs, depth and everything, we have them now in the subdivision regulations, so that's what we would prefer, just so we get uniformity for the applications.
I'll let John know what you mean. It does look fun. So just our process would be from here, there's actually just the timing of the planning boards, the way that they go. There's actually another TRC that comes before that. So we go back to the TRC beforehand, and then do the planning board meeting. And then they are also an advisory actually on this application.
Any other comments?
Doug, what TRC meeting would that be?
That's the July.
Okay.
So there's one in late July.
Yep.
They would be due back there at TRC. The staff will also be reviewing the new drainage information in detail. Our CONCOM liaison will also be able to track that process at the TRC. And then after TRC, and we have confirmation that from the professional staff that all of the drainage meets the requirements. I mean, based on a quick review today that we conducted this afternoon, it seems to meet it on the surface. The fact that there's nothing from inside the building, there's no floor drains that are contributing any other drainage features. Like, I think we're, you know, what they have from an on-site drainage seems to meet our standards. But, you know, the staff would have a role at TRC just to confirm that. And then after that, it'd be a planning board for their August meeting. I think it would be the second Tuesday in August would be the development plan review on this.
Anybody have anything else? Somebody want to make a motion? This is to the planning board.
Yeah, our motion is to the planning board.
Yeah, I can do it.
Okay,
go ahead. I'll interject.
Right. The applicant has demonstrated that they are managing stormwater from a 100-year storm and completely infiltrating it into the two stormwater BMPs, which is very, very good. And from that point of view, we're happy to see that the rainwater be recycled for groundwater recharge. Other issues are that we would want the applicant to ensure that there are no floor drains and that we understand that there'll be 100% containment of the water used and that'll be recycled. We advise that the maintenance plan for winter maintenance of the parking areas minimize use of de-icing salt, and ideally no snow should be placed in the stormwater BMPs and there should be fencing if necessary to keep plows from plowing the snow into the BMPs, because that contains a lot of sediment and gravel which would clog those BMPs pretty quickly. The soil erosion sediment control plan should clearly show the limits of disturbance and the type of material to be used for the limits of disturbance on the plan and in the field before construction begins, and that the limits of disturbance clearly delineate the stormwater BMPs that are on site to prevent any disturbance during construction. The O&M plan should be corrected to show that the rain garden is actually a bioretention system designed using the stormwater manual and the bioretention maintenance guidelines should be used, not generic infiltration. And the lawn area will be low maintenance lawn with only minimal fertilizer use needed to establish the lawn, and after that it'll be low input grass with just returning the clippings so that there's no fertilizer needed and no irrigation system for the lawn.
And updating the plans to reflect the town's updated tree planting and landscape subdivision.
Anybody have anything else? Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Good luck.
Order of business item G is discussion of potential community survey regarding ban on plastic shopping bags.
Hold on.
Yeah. We've seen them before.
But Doug, you provided us with one of the surveys.
I'm sorry, go ahead, David.
One of the surveys that was, which also did not have a very good turnout, but that was done after the ban had been put in. Do you have a sample of questions and such
in
that,
one of these documents that was just
be
cut
done?
And pasted and just not,
there was a survey done before, wasn't there?
In Barrington?
Yes.
The only survey that we were able to identify was the one that was in that packet that was emailed out.
Okay, yeah.
So let me dive into, let me pull that one out. We had a, I think we went through that pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
relatively.
So, too. Really?
I was thinking that we wouldn't have much time for our...
We're getting through everything quick here.
I know,
we
get
really
out here
did.
By
summer.
8 o'clock.
We're getting out before
no,
8.
No, 7. 7:10.
That's how we go. I'm with Lorraine. 7:10. Yeah. Okay. David, noted. 7:10.
All right.
Come on.
So, I would say... let me just find it here. Through it.
What are you looking for?
So we
material
survey.
So in the email I sent out to the group probably several weeks ago, I noted in a packet of material that we had developed based on Barrington and sent to the town council, we all agreed at the last meeting to review that packet again for consideration of questions that might be appropriate for a local survey going into, should we go with a ban or not? And
by the way, I like the wording of plastic reduction, plastic bag reduction initiative, as opposed to a bag ban, because obviously we're still allowing some bags.
Yeah.
It's more accurate and it's less off-putting. Mm.
More PC.
So I'm just trying to find a copy of that same survey that Barrington had done. It's in my packet here somewhere, buried amongst all the many items. Just to give us kind of like an idea of questions that we think would be appropriate.
But I think what we needed, I think we were going to also make a decision on whether we wanted to go ahead and take that on.
Yeah.
I think that we did, and that needs to happen. So we as a commission need to think through whether we want to lead an effort to conduct a survey to consider a ban on bags. And I think we know that this, you know, could be a lot of time spent, and it could result in not enough conclusive information for there to feel like, for the town council to feel like we should move forward with development of an ordinance. So I think that we need to think about that, and I think what we left at the last meeting was, let's just kind of review some of the old materials and, you know, remind ourselves the process that Barrington went through, mm-hmm. and think through whether we want to still keep that on our mind. So
I thought one thing that could also make it easier for us is the fact that Barrington's town solicitor is the same as our town solicitor, and he had all these legal opinions and et cetera, et cetera. He did a lot of vetting of all that info, so I think puts us a few steps ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're in a different place now. We certainly have more communities, specifically communities in southern Rhode Island, that are adopting these. I think that that doesn't change the fact that any development of an ordinance here would need, you know, a good process. We're government, we love process. To basically understand the community's will on this. You know, what are the different perspectives on the issue? I think we're going to need to wrap our arms around, you know, those that we feel would be, you know, in opposition to such an ordinance. We need to talk to the business owners, and both large and small, and try to anticipate what their concerns are, and if those concerns could be met through an ordinance. Or if it's just something where we have a group of people that wouldn't want any form of this ordinance, and we have, you know, maybe we're able to also determine, you know, the amount of the community that would be in support of such an ordinance. Mm-hmm. So I think that the question still stands. I do not have the thing that I emailed you all, which was the full packet of the Barrington. I mean, I could easily, you know, make a few copies. But I think what we decided to do was, we did not answer the question, yes, let's go forward with a survey, or no, let's not. We said, let's take a month to think about it and review those old materials, and at least start thinking about what would a survey include. Maybe that'll kind of get the juices going on whether we feel like this process, you know, is something we want
to
lead.
It was a little depressing to see the poor results of the feedback from the surveys. The percentages of people who responded were minuscule. And I think it would be so easy for, if the town council were opposed, it would be an easy thing to fall back on that, saying that you haven't got, you know, conclusive information. So we could do all this work.
No.
And
right. What was the percent?
Oh, something like 13%.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
30% is considered high.
Well, one thing that we could do also is put a public notice in the newspaper. And it could even have 8-10 questions in that public notice, and then tell them how to respond, either electronically or call you directly at home.
Well, I mean, there's so many, put my cell phone right there in the paper. I mean, there's a lot of different ways we could go about it. I think we wouldn't be able to, like, send a mail-out survey.
No.
That would be a really expensive,
time-consuming
process. I think we would probably, how I would envision the process is, the process begins by reaching out to some of the key stakeholders, both business entities and other, you know, like the Chamber of Commerce, other ways and means that we can easily reach people. And it'd be interesting to reach out to some environmental groups that might work locally, Eco Rhode Island, and kind of understand their perspectives to say, we're really looking at putting together a survey. What's your experience with that? And do you have any specific local contact lists that we could utilize to basically get some feedback on that? And then I think we can start to, after that initial round of phone calls and basically conversational outreach, we put together what we would consider as a proper formal process. And I think we'd need to ensure that whatever process we do take, if it's one that's a little passive, which would be like an ad in the paper with, you know, if you're reading this ad, please tell us your input on this. And I think we'd need to mix in some active. I think we'd actually need to go, like, do a sampling of businesses and make sure we're reaching out to businesses that rely on plastic bags and get feedback so that when we come back to the council, we can say that, you know, we did specifically reach out to businesses of these varying scales. Here were their major concerns. Here's how ordinance could still be developed and address those concerns, or here is how an ordinance would, you know, basically not, you know, here some of these concerns would never be addressed through an ordinance, and that, you know, they're just, you know, some people might be very reliant on their plastic bags. So I think that that's what the process would look like. I think if we wanted to take that process on, we would start by sending correspondence. Well, I guess we could talk about it. It'd be a commission decision. We could start with a few initial phone calls on our end just to kind of feel things out and think how that formal process might evolve. At some point, we're going to have to send something to the council to let them know, hey, we're picking this back up, and we wanted to inform you of our latest actions on this. The last the council knows of our interest in it is that...
2014.
Yeah, that we basically, it was on our radar, but we basically elected to drop it because there was state legislation that was being considered at that point, and we wanted to see if the state was going to run with that. They never ended up running with it, so, you know, we're sort of, you know, we kind of put it on our back burner, and if we're going to put it on our front burner, I think we need to let the council know so that no one's caught off guard.
Yeah.
This would definitely be one of those things that you're going to get. Everyone's going to call their favorite council person with their particular side or slant on it. And so council people need to be informed of really what's going on and what our consideration would be. I think even people like knowing that the town is asking for opinions about it will have very, you know, strong feelings and come out and say the town shouldn't even do this. But so it's like we need to make sure that we get in front of it with like what are we actually doing? What's the survey process being conceived, and how would that move forward?
So are we surveying more than just like the stakeholders, like the business owners?
I'd say we need to survey the entire community. So that's the trick is I think we need to make sure we get to the business owners, or else we probably won't have the people feeling like we adequately addressed that stakeholder group. But then I think we need the community as a whole.
Why?
Why do we need to hear from business owners?
No, I understand the business owners and the major stakeholders. I think they're the most important voice because it impacts them the most.
Yep.
I mean, I don't understand why you need it. I would say that most people aren't going to say much about it.
I think you might have a lot of people that will say, I think the town should move in this direction because it's just an environmentally conscious choice.
But that are going to respond through survey?
They might. I mean, so the way to put it is this, is like if we don't ask and we don't put it out there, then no one has an opportunity to react. If we ask, I mean, there's a chance that we're not going to get, like if you put an ad in the newspaper and you tell people to go onto the town's website and ask questions, like there's so many people that just filter them out.
Right.
You know, like
you
the various
forms. Studies show that you have to present the information in the way that you want them to respond.
Yeah.
So the idea that it's in the paper
and then
they have to go to their phone or computer, they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's very, that would be very passive. And the only way to get a direct response is if you... We could put it on the website.
You'd have
and
to like
you
stand outside
the
grocery store and
have
them complete it.
You might, we could use the town's Facebook page, which would link to the town's website, which could have a survey. So that's all one
Who's
medium.
On the town's Facebook page?
I don't know.
Are you running it then?
No,
okay.
I'm not running our
so
town's Facebook.
We're
not allowed to actually check Facebook in the town. So while we're working, we can't check our town's
Facebook. Let's have a town Facebook page. Good.
But, no, we do have a Facebook page. I don't know how much activity it has. But these are, like, the things that we would need to do. So, I mean, as much as I think good, hard outreach of, like, you know, calling businesses, trying to come with a range of business sizes and trying a sampling of, like, two or three of different sizes... That's important, and that's like the hard, like, council people are going to want to know, did you really contact those people most affected?
Right. So
and then
businesses is different.
And then I think that you want to have an opportunity for your general stakeholder, your average citizen that just says, I really want the town to make these kind of conscious choices, to have some input in the process. And that is going to be, that's like that really low return.
I was just going to say, that's going to be the hardest.
However,
well, one thing,
the town has some emails. Doesn't the guild use an email list?
Yeah, we do. So we can, and what I'm imagining is that...
Spamming? You want to spam people?
I mean, we can use some of the town's email lists to try to send an email. that would then give a link. So everyone's like, okay, I'm on my computer, I'm reading an email, I followed the link, now I'm at the town's website, now it's all one medium, one form of communication.
Yeah.
So you're not asking people to put down the paper and pick up the computer.
Right.
So I think we can use emails. We don't have like a town-wide email listserv because we just don't have
one. Well, that's the other thing. Mm. The town could start one. Even Charlestown, which has only one planner, has an email list that they send out their quarterly newsletter.
Yeah.
So like people subscribe to it?
Yeah, they go. They've been used to getting the paper newsletter, and then they transition to electronic, and they set up a system where people would have to sign up by email. And many towns have that type of electronic list. So if the town could start that, we'd begin with the guild. We could probably get the businesses from the chamber.
Yep.
And if there was a lot of publicity about signing up with the town for future notices, or even I think the link from other towns is right on the website. It's
but I mean, like, Facebook. But I mean, like, if you put it on Facebook too, and a link to sign up for email.
Yeah.
So we could. I think that the effort to get people just to sign up for a town email in general, whether it's this issue or another, that's like a separate issue. We don't want to.
We don't want to
mix ourselves too much into that. I mean, we have our specific thing we want to accomplish, and I agree it'd be nice if we had that. We do have the same resource. We do have like a basically a like sign up to get email alerts. Just nobody uses it, and it's the chicken and the egg. No one uses it because there's not great information on there. There's not great information because no one signed up.
Mm.
And so you're right, like, you know, maybe it would be great if there was a project that but we don't want our project to be the focal point.
I signed up for the planning board agendas.
Yep.
And I just got the first notice today. And the link to the agenda was broken. But there's also, so we could either say to the council that we're not interested.
Yep.
Or we present a plan. It's one or the other, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there, I sent you the material.
Yeah.
Not sure if I copied you in.
Yeah,
probably not.
The Narragansett stuff.
There's a class at URI, a master's class of students. Leadership or something, but it's in the environmental college, and they were working with Narragansett on figuring out plastic bag ban, and they did a whole bunch of research about the status of it around the state, and they left that with the town of Narragansett to then determine what to do next. And I contacted the professor who ran the class, and he said some of those students live in Narragansett or South Kingstown. And he feels they would be interested in working with Narragansett and also us probably at the same time to do it as a joint effort, at least the research phase.
Can we get them to do our survey?
So I wanted to raise it at this meeting to see if anyone is interested in asking these students for them to explore the survey concept, in which case we wouldn't have to worry about the town managing the results, because if the survey is done, you're going to need a website to manage the survey, like a Survey Monkey.
Right.
And they could do it as students through URI rather than coming to the town, where either you'd have the students working from your town website or a staff person having to do it, which is way too much work.
That's a lot of work. I mean, I think that it's like if there's an ability to use the student labor, that's great. We just have to also carefully craft, like, so we can't have the students kind of run their own survey.
No, we wouldn't let them go roughshod. They would be coming back to us for guidance, and they'd be presenting a draft of the survey. We'd comment on it.
I mean, I think that the way I'd frame it is that we can definitely involve them, that we would need to be in front of the process, and they'd follow our lead, not the other way around.
Right. And then maybe cooperate with coordinate with Narragansett if it worked out.
Yeah, I mean, I know if they're picking it up, like the two communities are very kind of closely related, so it makes a lot of sense.
It's the narrow river.
Yeah.
yeah, it's just a narrow river. It's really
tiny. Tiny separation.
So it would be worth thinking about. So one issue is, I think we have pretty good research on this already. You know, essentially we feel like here's what a municipality did to go through the steps. We've kind of already communicated like the basic kind of the setup research. This is why we would consider such a ban. And so if that's what they've done to for Narragansett, I'd be curious. I mean, maybe that's what
I sent you the whole packet.
Yeah, that. So, and it looks like they're actually cherry picking some
they
of the Barrington stuff
like
in
fact,
here too.
A draft fact sheet on about a proposed ban.
So, I mean, this would be interesting to look through, but it's probably like not. It may not be what we need for our town to take the next steps, which is
right. It's not the survey. But
yeah.
I think the students would understand.
Yeah. So I guess the question still remains, though. Regardless, it would sort of be the Conservation Commission leading an effort with assistance from URI, but the Conservation Commission sort of putting its neck out there saying, you know, we're going to contact these business owners. We're going to hear about it from as many people as we can and then try to document this all in, like, a very objective manner so that we can present, like, here's the findings, here's the survey of attitudes about this issue. So I think the question still remains, do we want to do that?
Who has time to do this? I'm not volunteering myself.
Yeah.
Well, who's has
probably
a burning
Chris.
Design?
Chris,
who has,
Chris
a burning
has a lot
interest?
Of free time
yeah.
to do this.
Sure. Who has a burning interest in the plastic bag ban?
I wouldn't say it's burning, but I certainly have an interest. I certainly have an interest in it.
Yeah. I mean, well, it would help if the students, if they're capable students, we'd be pretty much just advising them and directing them. Without having to do the actual work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So can we get their professor in and talk to him prior to making this decision?
Well, I already spoke to him, and since he's not in that, they're out of class, he recommended I speak with them directly to see if they're interested.
So can we ask them to come to a meeting so we can all talk to him?
Sure.
Okay, yeah,
that's a good idea.
So why don't we do that before we
get any council decision making?
Sure.
Because if they really aren't committed or can't commit, because, you know, sometimes students won't.
I think it'd be easier if I found out which ones were interested and how much time they had, and then if they agreed to actually participate and come to a meeting, then they
yeah.
can come to a meeting.
Yeah.
I think what I think that there would be, like,
council decision.
Two forms of survey, and one could be an in-person or phone survey, and that would be probably directed specifically at the businesses. And I think we would need to guide them or pretty much write the questions for them and, you know, if they have input, that would help us. And then I think we need a community-wide survey that would sort of be broader perspectives on the issue that I think is intended to get both positive feedback of people, like your average citizen saying, I want the town to do these things, or maybe your average citizen saying, no, the town should not be butting its business in these matters.
Right.
And so there'd kind of be two surveys. I think we'd really need to... us as a Concom feel like we've signed off on the final draft, however we get there. I would probably say to get there quicker, it's us writing most of it and then allowing the students to, if they have improvements or like other information that we would want to incorporate, great. And then if they could administrate it, I mean, literally be making the phone calls and find a way to, you know, get outreach on a SurveyMonkey. And we at the town, I mean, we could support it through like an ad in the paper. But, like, you know, like, that has the same problems. Mm-hmm. We could support it through sending out to the few email addresses we do have from previous projects, but that's not, like, a huge reach.
Right.
So it'd be interesting to see if URI has other strategies on
the
reach.
But we could also, you know, send some copy to the to newspapers and see if they want to have, you know, reporters come to one of these meetings or interview one of us.
We've gotten some traction in the local paper on on our discussions on this already. I mean, every time that Kendra is in attendance, she writes up that we're considering this. Mm-hmm. But we, you know, we've sort of haven't committed, so she's writing up that we're just considering it. I mean, she's writing stories on it without us making any big decisions. If we made a big decision and said, you know, we really want to do this, you know, we could use some press just to get the word out that we're doing this, I'm sure she would. Right
she
about that.
The Narragansett Times, right?
She's
the
she's the Times.
So I think the next step before, instead of just going around here, is for Lorraine to contact those students that may be interested, see what their commitment level is, if you're okay with that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And then
that's why I raised it.
And then have them come to them to a meeting and talk to them and actually see if we think, okay, yeah, they're really going to commit to this and they're really going to do it, because it's one thing to say it and then another thing to do it, and then
we actually construct the survey.
Yeah, and then and then we go from there, and then we can let the council know, hey, we would like to go forward with this. We have your eyes support. You know.
Yeah.
Let's have a little bit more groundwork going on before we notify them. Because,
yeah, no, I would agree.
Because I don't think anybody here has the time to do this on our own if you or I can't support us.
Plus, if Narragansett is thinking of doing a survey, it could be the same survey.
Would be a good idea, too. That's why it would be ideal timing. I mean, I'm curious to know like what the timing of the students' work is. So are they based on a semester schedule?
Yeah, they may not even be able to start until the fall.
So it's like, would they feel like they could conduct a whole survey in the 3 months?
Right. So these are questions that we have.
The professor is going to be teaching the same class next year.
In the fall?
I can't remember. I think it's a spring.
No, that sounds good, Lorraine. If you want to, you can feel free to invite them to the next meeting as like a placeholder.
Well,
and then if he just wants to like get back to
his email.
If you
want to just put it on the agenda as a discussion topic, it may be difficult to get in touch with all of them. Some of them may not live in Rhode Island.
Right.
They may be away. Yeah. So I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, we'll keep it. And if your feedback is that they couldn't attend, but here's some of their feedback on their commitment ability, then we can at least discuss it. Mm-hmm. It'll likely just be rolling as the same item as you see it on here, which is just discussion of, you know, consideration of a bag ban.
Right. Okay.
So we can at least just track progress on it.
Was this done as a class? So I mean, so that probably means they wrapped up at the end of the school.
Well, they had a big report at the end.
Oh, okay.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Which, I can send it to all of you electronically. It's not like conservation
Business. Yeah. Thank you.
There was an interesting piece of this is correspondence, but
it's elect officers.
Yeah, we do have to do that. But I.
I'm just trying to keep it going here.
It's more under this than correspondence. I know you are, and I'll be quick. I got something from the plastic industry. So clearly, somehow, they've got like Google searches out there, and they're able to determine when a community is considering a ban on plastic bags. So
because they're trying to pass a bill, they were trying to pass a bill at the state legislature to prevent towns from adopting a ban and to retract.
Right. And this was not. I've seen those emails, and I saw that potential legislation. This is not that. This was outside of. This was a national organization. And was basically sending an email like, hey, consider all the things that aren't terrible about plastic, and that, you know, if your goal is to reduce waste, we really support that, but this is really not the best area to spend your time and expertise. It was just interesting that our brief discussions of this, which have made it into the paper,
just from the Narragansett Times,
have triggered somebody's Google searches, and we have gotten a letter from a national organization that basically their job is to support the plastic industry. And to inform communities that are considering this of these other people. So, it was directed to. It's not something we need to like. You all need to see a copy of the letter. Thought it was interesting.
It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah.
The level of surveillance. It's crazy.
But the statistics, I mean, are incredible. I mean, the average consumer using 1,200 to 1,500 bags a year. Barrington could use 19.57 million bags. And only 11.5% got recycled in 2010, which is the most done.
Oh, plus, I read that they don't really get recycled. The market is so poor, they throw them away. I've heard of people who work at grocery stores, they take, even Belmont, they take those bags and put them in the trash.
That's horrible.
So they're only they're not required to recycle it, they're required to accept it.
Receptacle.
Yeah.
No, that's interesting. Mm.
So we all set for where we're going on this now?
Yes.
Till next month?
We are.
Good. Next, on the agenda is election of officers. President, Vice President, and Secretary.
Chair,
yep.
Vice Chair.
Chair, sorry.
Yeah.
I know you want to be the President.
This is generally a very casual, practice. We do it once a year. You can nominate somebody, or someone can even nominate themselves for a position. If we have multiple, and that person can decide if they actually want to be accepted for that position. And if there's multiple people, then we can discuss it. But generally, it's more reached by group discussion than it is reached by an election.
Right. Okay, I move to go for David Flanders as chair.
Second.
And to continue in his excellent role that he's been playing in that capacity.
Second.
I'm willing.
All right, David.
Excellent. Thank you.
David's the president.
David's the president. All right, who wants to be Pence?
That's a horrible place to be.
Individually, do we vote?
Would you be, no, we'll vote for Slate.
You
want to be vice chair again?
Not really. Do research and make motions if I'm
happy
to serve as chair.
So the chair can be the chair or vice chair can be just as active. I think traditionally the chair has always tried to serve more of a neutral role,
right.
But the chair can be as vocal on any issue as.
But typically the chair, if David's not here and I'm the chair, I can't vote unless it's to break a tie, right?
No, not necessarily. No, actually, we don't have that. That we don't use that version of Robert's rules, so you can vote. In fact, when we have votes, even if David is calling the vote, he's still voting. We call, you know, when we do our minutes, everybody votes on all the motions. So you're never really silent. And in the discussion, like it generally, sometimes it's nice to have someone that is more an officiating as opposed to advocating. And I think it's wise to have a chair that kind of tries to remain neutral, mm-hmm. while other members, if they say, I'm really, really hyped up about this and I'm really going to go for it, then it's not wise for that to be the chair.
We got David with trees clearing the septic system.
I think we need someone that's more objective, like Mary.
What do you think, Mary? It's not my favorite option, but I could do it.
All right. So... That sounded like a nomination.
Yeah. I nominated Mary. She might hate me for it.
I second that.
And do you accept that nomination? Secretary?
I'll stay with secretary since I don't do much.
Okay. Sorry. So wait, let's have a vote on vice.
Well, let's do the whole slate as presented.
Yeah.
We'll have a vote.
Yeah, that's fine. That's
okay, any further discussion on it? Someone make a motion to accept the slate?
I move to accept that motion.
Second?
Second.
Okay. All, any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Great.
Okay, sure. There we go.
Thank you, Mary.
You're aware of the role of the secretary.
Yeah.
We have to make sure David's
here
all
it's, the time. It's minutes and agendas. It's.
Yeah, I don't do much.
I have a
No, yeah, agendas. Well, it's funny. No. The role of the secretary is written in the bylaws as the person that's responsible for handling and posting all of the minutes and agendas. And so we do that as staff. Yeah. Like, let's say the staff took a month off. It's like,
I have to come on.
Yeah, yeah. You have to be. If for whatever reason the town decides to like greatly reduce its staffing capacity of any given board, it's that secretary that's taking the biggest hit.
Excellent.
Everyone thinks that, oh, I don't want to be the chair, but no, it's the secretary.
We still have access to
transcribe. We approve this.
Yeah, nothing's going to change. Yeah, I mean, nothing's actually changing, but it's like if there was some sort of huge, the town is cutting half of its staff for some weird reason, and now we can't provide direct staff support.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be the first thing to go.
Last item is correspondence.
None.
Excellent.
Anybody else?
No.
Meeting is adjourned.
Happy 4th.
Thank you.
Day after 4th.